The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily radio show. It's good to have you with us yet again. Well, last night I was able to experience an opera in the Royal Opera House, this time in London. And I hope, if not on tomorrow's show, hopefully in a show real soon, to just tell you a little bit more about that experience. Some of you might remember a few comments that I made about the State Opera House that we visited a month or two ago in Vienna, Austria. And so now I've been able to experience another great opera house that's in the world today. And the show really was magnificent in so many ways. But I wanted to put that off just because there really have been, as you know, quite a few heavy things to get into and discuss. Really over the last several weeks, but in particular over the last week, and I just wanted to carry on with more on that today. Yesterday, if you listened to the program, you heard me mention that latest issue of the Trumpet magazine, and really how all of our magazines, every month that they come out, they've just been so spot on, so timely. Even when the articles are prepared weeks, months, sometimes in advance. And the same can be said for my father's TV program. A lot of times he'll address something or bring out some prophecies from your Bible, talk about them on the television program, and then when that goes to air, 9, 10 days later, there's been several instances down through the years where it's just been so incredibly timely, given how much we have to prepare these messages in advance. Of course, the radio station and this program now, it does give us just a better opportunity, I suppose, to comment on things as they're happening and to have sort of a running story flow. But it is important for us to just to make sure, as I said yesterday, that we really are staying glued to what God is inspiring, what God is revealing, in particular, with those one or two main articles by my father in each issue of the Trumpet magazine, and of course his weekly program. I told you yesterday about the latest issue, the August issue, with that quote that just fills up the entire cover, that quote from Herbert Armstrong talking about Germany dominating Europe and that Britain won't be a part of it. Pretty amazing. Now we've seen that fulfilled. That's in the August issue, along with another very important article, as I went through with you yesterday, America's Real Enemy. That's going to be important for you to study if you haven't already. When you get that issue, make sure to go through it. You can go through it right now online, of course. But that's an article that we're going to keep coming back to. Well, if you go back to the issue before that one, this is the one on China steering the world toward war. This is the one that featured that piece on China's grab of territory in the South China Sea. It's aggressive military posture. China is indeed steering the world toward war. There's an important section in that article. This, again, is by my father, where he's talking about the Great Tribulation, prophesied, of course, in many Bible passages. But he's drawing attention in particular to the start of the Great Tribulation. Jesus in Matthew 24 talked about it being a time of violence and bloodshed like never before, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time, he said. He went on to say that unless God intervened to cut it short, there'd be no human beings left. Now we can't go about our lives and just pretend that these prophecies don't exist, or that Jesus Christ didn't say that after his disciples asked him, well, what's going to happen in the last days? What's going to happen in the final days before your return to this earth? He said there's going to be great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world. The prophet Daniel, he said it would be a time of trouble such as never was since there was a nation. That's how your Bible describes this tribulation, this great tribulation that's to unfold right before the return of Jesus Christ. Now, there's many other passages, of course, you need to be familiar with regarding the latter-day descendants of ancient Israel, the modern-day Israelites. For that, you need in particular the United States and Britain in prophecy. I can't cover everything, but let me just take you over to Ezekiel 4. This is the scriptures, these few verses here in Ezekiel 4 that my father draws attention to in that article, China Steering the World Toward War. That's the July issue of the Trumpet magazine. And embedded in that article, there's a section on the start of the Great Tribulation. And my father explains in that piece how that in the past we've believed or taught that this tribulation period, that it would begin when our peoples, our nations, the nations of Israel, the modern day descendants of Israel, we used to believe that would begin when our nations were attacked from without, attacked militarily. But here in Ezekiel 4 and also in Ezekiel 5, really, you see that attack starts first from within. From within. Ezekiel 4 and verse 1, it says, "You also, son of man, take you a tile and lay it before you and portray or engrave," it means, "engrave upon it the city, even Jerusalem." So God had Ezekiel, his prophet, go through these unusual situations to illustrate what was going to happen to our nations in the latter days. Verse 2 says, "And lay siege against it, and build a fort against it, and cast a mount against it, set the camp also against it, and set battering rams against it round about. Moreover," it says, take you unto you an iron pan, and set it for a wall of iron between you and the city." Jerusalem, of course, is a type of all Israel. We're talking about the latter-day descendants of Israel. It says, "And set your face against it, and it shall be besieged, and you shall lay siege against it. This shall be a sign to the house of Israel." So this is a sign. I'm illustrating what's going to happen so you can see it, so they can see it. Well, in that article, "China is Steering the World Toward War," my father talks about how the House of Israel primarily refers to our nations, the descendants of Israel, being the United States, Britain, primarily those two. And then he writes this, "Here is pictured a siege against the House of Israel. It's a prophecy that one-third of these nations will be destroyed economically and socially by a siege." He says other prophecies show that this siege will cause an economic cataclysm that will develop into race wars and fighting for food and survival. This is how the Great Tribulation begins. This is what my father was talking about, not just in the latest issue, as I went through yesterday, But even the issue prior to that, other prophecies showing that this siege will cause an economic cataclysm that will develop into race wars and fighting for food and survival. So you can see why we're paying such close attention to what's happening in America right now. I mean, with all this inflammatory rhetoric on race, with the attack in Dallas last week, and then you add to that all the political division and the fact that we have Republican and Democrat conventions coming up in the next few weeks, increased security heading into those conventions, and of course the United States electing a new president in four months or so, I think it's safe to say we're really at a critical moment with respect to race relations in the United States. Remember, the siege, it begins with an economic siege and also, as he says there, socially. Social breakdown. Race wars. We really are. I think Dallas takes it to another level of divisiveness, of hatred and strife. The Bible has a lot to say about it. Here in Ezekiel 4, I read through Isaiah 1 in the last couple of programs. Ezekiel 5, we'll get to some of that later on today if we have time. And then, of course, you have, well, not just what we've been saying in the trumpet, you have what Herbert Armstrong was saying in the Plain Truth so many years ago, decades ago, back in 1968 when he was writing about those student rebellions and the racial violence that was just running rampant across American campuses. Mr. Armstrong said, look now at these sudden emotional flare-ups of student revolt and of race consciousness, prejudice, resentments, and hatreds. Why the sudden inflaming of student rebellion? Why have both exploded into violence? Now you have many today talking about us going right back into the 1960s. Only worse. Only worse. Mr. Armstrong says the underlying cause is simply human nature. Human nature is the underlying cause of the strife, the revolt, the violence. Human nature is behind it. And then he went and said further, in most cases, I can tell you definitely that these riots and student uprisings have been deliberately planned, intentionally provoked, and well organized. See, like we covered the other day, there's a spirit behind it, Ephesians 2:2. There's a spirit behind it. And then, of course, Satan uses human instruments to get it all planned and organized. It's intentionally provoked. He said back in 1963, Mr. Armstrong did, race war is coming. Racial tensions, passions, and hatreds are being deliberately stirred by organized planning. It's intentionally provoked. These are not just random acts. He says it will explode into mass violence that will stagger the imagination. And so we've been watching for this. Given what he was saying decades ago and what the prophecies bring out, of course, we're not here taking sides at all, but we are telling you about human nature. And we will tell you, like Mr. Armstrong did, that it's being deliberately stirred by organized planning. This is something that's being intentionally provoked. Intentionally provoked. 8 years ago, well, you'd be hard-pressed to find anyone in the major media who would say that, well, what President Obama or the possibility of a President Obama, he wasn't a president yet, he was a senator campaigning. But all in the major media were pretty much in agreement. Well, this is someone that's going to bring the races together. This is someone that's going to improve race relations, that's going to improve the unity and the togetherness of the American people. And what did my father have to say in the Trumpet magazine? At thetrumpet.com? He said many people believe that Mr. Obama is going to greatly improve race relations. But our racial problems are going to rapidly get much worse. I gave you this quote the other day. He says the race card is going to be played often for political gain. See, it's all happening so fast. That was 8 years ago, that warning in the Trumpet. My father saying that the racial problems are going to rapidly get much worse. Now you look at the surveys, some of those that you've heard about over the last year or the last couple of years, and just how worried Americans are, how concerned they are. As I paraphrased yesterday, Heather McDonald, her interview with that policeman in Chicago, he's never seen it like this. Never. Not in 20 years. He can't even do his job. The job is virtually undoable, he said, because there's so much hatred, there's so much distrust. Where did that come from? And why is it happening so fast? Our racial problems are going to rapidly get much worse. That was the Trumpet.com's position 8 years ago. And now you see where we are today. And you can say the same today. You can say the same today as of right now. What about the weeks or the months or the years ahead? Well, it's going to get much worse, sad to say. And it's going to be rapid, these changes. Yesterday, President Obama spoke at the funeral ceremony for the five officers who were murdered last week during that Black Lives Matter protest. And for about the first 15 minutes or so, the speech was mostly about the slain officers and the law enforcement and the Dallas Police Department and such. But then he reverted back to a familiar message. Then he got right back into all of the supposed racial injustices that are in the criminal justice system and how that system needs to be reformed. I'll play a few clips from that piece, or rather that speech, in just a second. But let me just first set it up by quoting to you from a piece written by Victor Davis Hanson. This was in the National Review just yesterday. And the title, you know what he's getting at with this title. The title is Fundamentally Transformed, past tense. Fundamentally Transformed, it's happened.
We are 5 days away from fundamentally transforming the United States of America.
That's President Obama, October 30th, 2008. His wife, Michelle, a few months before that, she spoke about having to change our traditions, America's traditions, having to change our history. She said, we have to move to a different place as a nation. And well, that change, that's happened. Victor Davis Hanson puts it there in past tense. Fundamentally transformed. He asks in that piece, have we reached a point of no return? Quite a few commentators have been asking that in recent years, in case you haven't noticed. Have we reached a point of no return? Victor Davis Hanson said this, President Obama, ever since he first appeared on the national political scene in 2008, has systematically adopted a rhetoric and an agenda that is predicated on dividing up the country according to tribal grievances in hopes of recalibrating various factions into a majority grievance culture. In large part, he has succeeded politically, but in doing so, he has nearly torn the country apart. Indeed, it is no exaggeration to suggest that no other recent president has offered such a level of polarizing and divisive racial bombast. Quite an assertion by Victor Davis Hanson, the distinguished historian, writing there at the National Review. It's no exaggeration to suggest that no other recent president has offered such a level of polarizing and divisive racial bombast. Well, Moore should have seen it coming in, given all of his radical associations and ties leading up to his campaign back in 2007 and 2008, and even throughout his presidency, and looking at what he comments on and when, who he invites into the White House, even in the entertainers that he loves and celebrates, and some of the things that those musicians, if you can call them that, sing about or rap about. Killing the cops, killing the police. What a culture. That's a subculture that's very popular out there, particularly in black communities, that talks often about fighting against the police, warring against the police. And it's out there circulating the myth that the police are after them. You may have heard about that study. I think the New York Times discussed it the other day. How that police officers are actually less likely to shoot blacks than other races. But never mind that. Never mind that. Carry on with the storyline. Let me just play you a clip. This is Mr. Obama, the president, again, yesterday, he's at this funeral service for the 5 murdered police officers. And this is what he said about midway through. This is clip 2.
And so I'm reminded of a passage in John's Gospel. Let us love not with words or speech, but with actions and in truth. If we're to sustain the unity we need to get through these difficult times, if we are to honor these 5 outstanding officers who we lost, then we will need to act on the truths that we know. And that's not easy. It makes us uncomfortable. But we're going to have to be honest with each other and ourselves.
For the most part there, I mean, the words sound pretty good. Honesty, truth, love, action. I think he might have been referring to the epistle of John, or the first epistle, rather than John's gospel. But either way, I mean, both the gospel of John and the first book or the first epistle of John have a lot to say, they certainly do, about truth, about love. I mean, we've gone through those verses on truth just this week. John 8 and verse 32, and you shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. That's the same chapter where it talks later about Satan the devil being the father of lies. He was a murderer from the beginning, and there's no truth in him. There's no truth in him. That's the only way to be freed from his influence, by seeking refuge in the truth. Not lies, the truth. Yesterday I quoted to you that article from the latest trumpet. My father saying, lies enslave and destroy us. Lies are the tools of tyrants. It's the truth that sets us free. We should be passionate lovers of truth. And he goes on to say that we have to face reality here. Something deadly dangerous has seized America, far more than what people realize. That's why there's so many lies. That's why there's so many different opinions, so much divisiveness. Going back to that epistle, 1 John, the one that the president evidently referenced in his speech, this is what it says about love. This is the love of God, that we keep God's commandments. That we keep God's commandments. And so law and order, I mean, that underpins love. I mean, it is what love is. To love God is to keep and to observe his laws. And when that breaks down, when Christians turn to lawlessness, well, they lose that love. They lose the truth. And it works the same way in our society. There's another verse, Psalm 111:10. The fear of the Eternal is the beginning of wisdom. It says, a good understanding have all they that do his commandments. A good understanding. How do we get that? How do we arrive at the truth? How do we come to know the truth and to understand? Well, we have to do something with God's commandments, specifically, obey them. Notice what Herbert Armstrong had to say about that principle in Psalm 111:10. This is clip 10.
Does no one seem to understand prophecy? Why is it that the churches do not understand Bible prophecies? Why do the theologians not understand Bible prophecies? Let the Bible tell you in the 111th Psalm and verse 10, it says, the fear of the Eternal is the beginning of wisdom. A good understanding have all they that do his commandments. But the churches say the commandments were done away. They say that Jesus nailed them to the cross. They say that we're not under the law, but under grace.
Now, a similar point, as I say, can be made about our quest for the truth in this age that we're living in, an age that's becoming increasingly more lawless. Armstrong says there, I mean, the traditional Christian world, they can't understand prophecy. Why? Why? Well, because of the spirit of lawlessness. The understanding is not there. Because they're not doing the commandments. And so similarly, when you see the nation turn to lawlessness, well, truth is going to be a rare commodity. Lies and lies will be everywhere. We'll never understand or know the truth until we start with this. Keep the commandments. Keep and observe the laws. Now, the police, again, looking at it in the national sense, they're out there enforcing the laws. Are there some that are not going to do that perfectly? Well, none of them will. But you break down that system, and as I said the other day, that's the last line of defense. And there are, just so you know, there are voices out there now calling for that. Just the removal of the police entirely. They see the police as the problem. You think about what that would do to our already dangerous cities that are exploding in violence, where the violence and the murder is increasing in the last year or two. What would it be like if you didn't have any law enforcement officials? But coming back to this point, law keeping is the key. That's what the Apostle John said. That's what he stressed in his gospel, in his epistles. Now, coming back to this speech yesterday, here's, again, President Obama at the funeral service, clip one.
And today in this audience, I see people who have protested on behalf of criminal justice reform grieving alongside police officers. I see people who mourn for the five officers we lost, but also weep for the families of Alton Sterling and Philando Castile.
Both sides are represented here. Now, you have to pay attention to the moral equivalence that President Obama is drawing here. And more than just once during the speech. I mean, this is the same strategy the radical left uses to justify terrorist organizations. You know, the IDF takes out a terrorist hiding in Ramallah, and a Palestinian teenager breaks into an Israeli home and stabs a 13-year-old Jewish girl 30 times. It's all the same. Tit for tat. I mean, both incidents result in the loss of human life, and so that's tragic, either way you look at it. Whether it's the little girl stabbed repeatedly to death, or the terrorist hunkering down in Ramallah on the run that gets taken out by the Israeli police or the IDF. It's all the same. It's back and forth. Never mind motive or intent. Never mind who's on the side of law and order. And never mind who's actively fighting against the rule of law. It's all the same. Now, in Dallas, you had a black man who hated whites. He hated white policemen in particular. He said so. He admitted that. He had a virtual ammunition factory in his home. Bombs, explosives. He was planning, evidently, a much bigger attack, a massive attack against whites or law enforcement. We don't know for sure. But we do know what he decided to do on the morning of July the 7th. This man left his home with purpose. With purpose, with intent, with motivation. To find that place, that perch, in the parking garage in downtown Dallas, from which he could shoot and kill as many white policemen as possible during a Black Lives Matter protest. Now, President Obama is equating that, what I just described to you, he equates that with a white police officer. We'll just use the example from Louisiana, because the police officers involved in the Minnesota case, they weren't even white. So leave that aside for a moment. But the president is equating what happened in Dallas with a white police officer shooting a black suspect after a struggle in which the suspect was thought to be reaching for his gun. It really is a disgusting comparison, and it's one that's made now routinely. Many powerful voices, not just the president, many of them, they're on TV, they're writing about it, They're protesting with that. They're chanting that. It's just back and forth. A black racist murders five policemen. And in the minds of so many, it's exactly the same. It's exactly the same as a white police officer shooting a black suspect who might be doing something dangerous or resisting arrest or reaching for a gun or reaching for the cop's gun, whatever. It's something now, as I say, that you hear commonly. It's not unusual to hear that often. Here's the president again from yesterday. This is clip three.
We also know that centuries of racial discrimination, of slavery and subjugation, and Jim Crow, they didn't simply vanish with the end of lawful segregation. They didn't just stop when Dr. King made a speech or the Voting Rights Act and the Civil Rights Act were signed.
You hear that. There are quite a few statements like that, and you wonder, was he actually at a funeral service for these five police officers? And the familiar refrains, slavery, subjugation, Jim Crow, and so on. It didn't end. It didn't end. We've still got to fight for equality. See, Victor Davis Hanson's right. It's no exaggeration to suggest that no other recent president has been so polarizing. Another comment from yesterday, clip four.
But America, we know the bias remains. We know it. Whether you are black or white or Hispanic or Asian or Native American or of Middle Eastern descent, we have all seen this bigotry in our own lives at some point. We've heard it at times in our own homes. If we're honest, perhaps we've heard prejudice in our own heads and felt it in our own hearts.
Keep in mind, this is a funeral. This is not a campaign rally or a stump speech. He's not making a public statement. He's not having an exchange with a journalist in a press conference. This was a funeral service for five police officers, for four white and one Hispanic police officers. And the president's going on and on about slavery, subjugation, Jim Crow, prejudice. We've all had it. We've all had it in our heads. It's been in our hearts. Certainly it would have been more appropriate to wait and give those kinds of comments in another forum. But you'll recall what, I think it was Rahm Emanuel who said, never let a crisis go to waste. The whole country, the whole nation's paying attention. The nation is in mourning, and this is seen as another opportunity to carry on with the same agenda that's been there from the beginning. This is clip five from yesterday.
None of us is entirely innocent. No institution is entirely immune, and that includes our police departments.
Nobody's immune. No institution is entirely immune, including the police departments. That's interesting, I think, too, when you add to this some of the statements that he made yesterday. He got back into the country, I guess, Sunday night, maybe Monday morning. And then Monday, it was at the White House that he met, I think it was a couple of hours, he met with leaders from eight different law enforcement groups. And the Washington Post reported that he told those law enforcement officials that I'm your best hope. You know, I'm the one that's going to bring the races together. I'm the one that's going to repair the damage between the black community and law enforcement. It's really pretty amazing. I mean, some of the same sentiments that you heard so many saying in 2008. And here he's the most polarizing president with respect to race relations. Certainly the most polarizing recent president, as Victor Davis Hanson says. And yet convinced, as are many of his supporters, that he's the best hope, the best option for unity, for togetherness. He's the best hope to bring both sides together. Well, you have to go back to what the Bible prophesies and what Mr. Armstrong was talking about in the 60s. And my father then again, in 2008, in the Philadelphia Trumpet. When we come back, I'll wrap up with a few more clips from yesterday's speech, and also, I think, an important conclusion that's there at the end of Victor Davis Hanson's column. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. Man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Fleury's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
In that Victor Davis Hanson piece that I referred to in the first segment, he talked about how often the president will speak to these issues on race before he has all of the facts, like in the cases of what happened in Louisiana and Minnesota last week. And then when the facts start rolling in, calling into question the talking points and the theorizing, as Victor Davis Hanson brings out, then he never goes back to correct the record. Victor Davis Hanson says, nor does he address facts from Ferguson to Dallas that do not fit his political agenda. So there's an agenda here. There's a message. And you hear it brought out time and time again, even at a funeral for five police officers, supposed to be for five police officers. You have the same agenda over and over again. This is, again, from his speech yesterday, clip number 6.
And so when African Americans from all walks of life, from different communities across the country, voice a growing despair over what they perceive to be unequal treatment, when study after study shows that whites and people of color experience the criminal justice system differently,
that if you're black, you're more likely to be pulled over or searched or arrested. More likely to get longer sentences. More likely to get the death penalty for the same crime. When mothers and fathers raise their kids right and have the talk about how to respond if stopped by a police officer, yes, sir, no, sir, but still fear that something terrible may happen when their child walks out the door, still fear that kids being stupid and not quite doing things right might end in tragedy. When all this takes place more than 50 years after the passage of the Civil Rights Act, we cannot simply turn away and dismiss those in peaceful protest as troublemakers or paranoid.
I think what's interesting there is what he said early on about the growing despair. It's worse. It's worsening, in other words, this unequal treatment. And then he says study after study shows this, this, and this. Well, I mean, you could give facts to what's, as I covered yesterday, to what's actually happening in black communities. Tragedy after tragedy. The shootings over the course of a weekend in Chicago. There were, I believe it's 36 black men last year, 36 unarmed black men last year shot by a police officer. And most because they were doing something dangerous or they were coming after the policeman. 36. I mean, when you talk about those that were shot without any justification for the police officer, you're basically talking about a few. It's a rarity, in other words. I mean, there's 40 million blacks in the United States. And you look at the numbers. To take Chicago just as one example, I went through it yesterday. 32 blacks. Well, I don't know if they're all black, but I would imagine most of them were. The shootings over the weekend. 32 in one weekend. Where is the crisis here? Where is the real sense of growing despair? If they're law-abiding black citizens in the west side or the east side, the south side of Chicago, they're going to want more police there. They're going to want more law enforcement to help protect the communities. But whatever happens, whatever the incident is, whatever the forum, as we heard yesterday, doesn't matter. It's the same political agenda. It's an opportunity to take advantage of a crisis, to get those same talking points out there. One final quote here. He had this to say about briefly about the Black Lives Matter movement. This is clip 7.
And I understand these protests, I see them, they can be messy. Sometimes they can be hijacked by an irresponsible few. Police can get hurt. Protesters can get hurt. They can be frustrated. But even those who dislike the phrase Black Lives Matter, surely we should be able to hear the pain of Alton Sterling's family.
There's the moral equivalence again. So you may not like Black Lives Matter and what happened out of that protest in Dallas, but what about Alton Sterling? And sure, these protests can get messy and police can get hurt, but, you know, protesters can get hurt. And so it's tit for tat. It's back and forth. That really is amazing to me. It's revealing, isn't it? Sometimes the protest can be hijacked by an irresponsible few. See, it's just a few. It's just one or two bad apples. Last Thursday, of course, before Dallas, it was a totally different message in response to Alton Sterling and the other case in Minnesota The whole criminal justice system was flawed and racist and unjust. Now the administration has to backtrack a bit. How revealing, though. Is it just a few bad apples? It didn't sound like it in that Minnesota protest last year. Pigs in a blanket, fry them like bacon. There were quite a few people chanting that, as I recall, judging by the sound bites. And the protest in New York. Later in the year. What do we want? Dead cops. What do we want? Dead cops. What do we want? Dead cops. Well, they got it. They got what they wanted. Now 5 of them are dead. 5 of them are dead, and here at a funeral service, the President of the United States is defending, of all movements, of all organizations, he's defending Black Lives Matter. I told you yesterday about the meeting he had earlier this year, back in February, with the leaders, some of them, of this movement. And this is what he said in February in response, or rather following that meeting he had with Black Lives Matter.
They are some serious young people. I told them that they're much better organizers than I was when I was their age. And I'm confident that they're going to take America to new heights.
He's confident that Black Lives Matter is going to take America to new heights. And so with that kind of thinking in the White House, with those kinds of guests being invited in, to say nothing of some of the others, the hip-hop artists and such that are calling for dead cops, just like those protesting in New York. What do we want? Dead cops. Where do you suppose this is headed? Well, let me just draw your attention to this conclusion at Victor Davis Hanson's piece. He says, up to now, the war zones in Chicago and Philadelphia and other inner cities that routinely experience abject killing each week have been largely ignored by progressives. Given the nature of black-on-black violence in cities with strict gun control laws, liberal governments, and ample social welfare programs. All these cities have the welfare they want. There's strict gun control laws. There's a Democratic mayor in most cases. And people shooting each other up by the hundreds each year. Thousands when you add these big cities together. Yet it may be, he says, that these recent shootings in Dallas and various other cities, rather than signaling a new dialogue, mark a strategy of exporting gun violence to purported white purveyors of racism. And so there's a new strategy here at play. Think of what Mr. Armstrong said about it being organized, about it being planned. Think about the intent. Hanson says, if that happens, then we're back to the 1960s, but worse. Read the online racist comments posted on any major news agency's accounts of a crime involving race to sense the polarization that has intensified since 2008. See, it was supposed to get better. That's what the talking head said. This is great. I mean, this speech on race in 2008, it's spine-tingling. It's inspiring. Meanwhile, Hanson says, abroad, the world looks not just at the tearing apart of American society under Obama, but at that society's collective inability to even discuss the catalyst for either Islamic terrorism of the Orlando and San Bernardino sort, or the recent racial violence. When this is collated with 7 years of failed reset with Russia, the Iranian deal, the rise of ISIS, the implosion of the Middle East, and the new belligerency in China and North Korea, we may be facing a final 6 months of a lame duck presidency, the likes of which have never been seen in modern political history. Well, when you think about what happens leading into and there at the beginning of the prophesied Great Tribulation, as I said there at the start, none of this should really surprise you. None of this should surprise you, and there is, as I indicated at the end of yesterday's show, the hope. I mean, the hope, even in all those prophecies in Matthew 24, is that it leads right into solutions. A kingdom, a government set up on this earth to enforce law and order. And as all of humanity comes underneath that government and submits to those laws and actually lives by and abides by those laws, then our minds will be opened to understand the truth, to understand God's love. What a wonderful society that will be when it's finally set up and established by Jesus Christ as King over all. Well, there's plenty more to talk about on this subject. Perhaps we'll get into it further even. I know we've been fleshing it out pretty good this entire week. But we're out of time for today's program. So I want to thank you for joining us once again on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Send us your emails to td@kpcg.fm. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you tomorrow.